Welcome to Bigger Than Business, where you'll discover real-world stories of business owners living their purpose. This is the podcast for anyone who wants their success to be about more than just money. In these interviews, you'll encounter men and women all over the world who draw strength and resilience from understanding why they do what they do and how they remain true to that purpose through the ups and downs that every business owner will eventually face. In each episode, you'll see your convictions can propel your actions in the marketplace. We'll explore why success is grander, broader, and far more fulfilling when it is driven by a vision beyond oneself. Get ready to explore how your life can be bigger than business.
How do you pursue your passions through your business ventures and turn them into a way to help your community? Hello, I'm your host, Jeff Holler, founder and CEO of the Capital Chart Room. In addition to helping grow his family's company that experienced 43 straight profitable years, Alan Petchy built his own portfolio of companies starting when he was a junior in high school. Entrepreneurial spirit instilled in him by his father at a very young age ensured that Alan would not only seek success on the business front, but would also lead to a legacy of helping others. From comic books to music to real estate, Alan pursued his passion and used that success to give back to his city and communities. Listen as Alan shares how his family history helped shape his passions and his future, and why recognizing skill and talent in others leads to happiness and success. With me today is Alan Petchy, who with his wife Bonnie, owner invests in a number of ongoing businesses, like commercial and residential real estate companies, a restaurant group that includes the Candlelight Inn, one of Arlington's longest tenured and most well-known restaurants that sits in the shadows of the Dallas Cowboys, AT&T Stadium, a cabinet-making company, a music recording company, an investment company, and Urban Union, a real estate development that has helped bring life and economic success back to downtown Arlington. Alan and Bonnie, it's kind of like a private equity company they've developed. Alan is also a gifted musician and an individual that is highly respected for his integrity, creativity, ingenuity, and business savvy, and for surrounding himself with great people throughout the Fort Worth, Dallas, and Arlington area, and throughout the country. Alan is also known for being married to Bonnie Petchy, his wife of 30 years. Bonnie served on prestigious boards locally, including Cook Children's Hospital, the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, and Fort Worth Country Day School. And she is admired and appreciated by everybody that knows her. Well, Alan, welcome to the Bigger Than Business podcast.
Thank you, Jeff.
We're really excited to have you here, and I appreciate you taking the time to do this. Alan, I want to jump right in because your family history is really interesting. Your dad was an entrepreneur, Arnold Petchy, and he founded a company that he eventually sold, the A.E. Petchy Company. And you share how you became his first employee. Would you mind sharing that story with our listeners?
Certainly. I have to go back in one more generation just to kind of get the feel of the kind of person my father was. His father fought in World War I for Austria, was a prisoner of war in Italy. His mother was from Hungary, Budapest, and in World War I, all of the men in her family were killed, and she had lost her mother previous to that. So at the end of the war, my grandfather goes back to his hometown in Austria, Kosciuszko, which is now in communist Czechoslovakia, and decides that there's nothing left for him in that, not only that country, but there's nothing left for him on that continent. And he takes his savings and leaves for Cleveland, Ohio, literally fighting against the country he's moving to.
Now, do you know how he found Cleveland, Ohio, of all places?
Yeah, I don't know what the connection was there, but it's not a seaport, but somehow he ended up in Cleveland as a machinist. Then my grandmother, all the men were killed in her family, and her grandmother was the only one left. And the United States had something called the War Orphans Act. And my grandmother was 16 at the time, had no experience traveling outside of hungry at all, but her grandmother got her signed up for the War Orphans Act, said goodbye to her, put her on the ship at 16 years old, packed her up with whatever clothes she had in her violin, and without being able to speak to the language, sent her off wow. to a new country at 16 years old.
Wow.
She ends up in Cleveland, Ohio, and I believe that they met at English classes at the local YMCA. This is around mid-20s. She also told me that when she came to the country, not being able to speak the language, she had her violin and could go to the YMCA and play with the orchestra. And that's how she was able to communicate with other people initially. But at 16 years old, that's just the personalities of my father's parents. Now, what came of that was the fact that my father has an older sister, my Aunt Adeline, who's still alive at age 90. And I might say, a year and a half ago, was fighting cancer. Then just recently, she at her home contracted COVID-19.
Oh, wow.
And 3 months later, she battled it off and she's back home now. So
she's a strong lady.
Oh, my gosh. I hope I have inherited some of that. My aunt was born in 1929, my father in 31. And what possessed my grandparents to have the most important thing in their family life was to have my father and his sister graduate college. So they both graduated from Ohio University in Athens. And from there, my father got an engineering degree. And he started working as an engineer designing landing gear for military aircraft. And he told me he'd design it and he'd work on it and get it right. And he said when it was time for the salesman to go out, he'd go with the salesman so he could explain everything to the customer, the military, usually. And he said, then at the end of it, the salesman would lean over and give a price. And he said, when I went back, I told our boss, I said, get rid of him. I'm doing all the work. I can quote a price on top of this. So from there.
No, I've met your dad. That sounds like your dad.
Oh, yeah. It's a perfect example of him. And from there, he went to work for ITT Supernaut in Paola, Pennsylvania. And we wound up moving a lot because Dad would say, every time there's an offer for a promotion, I'm going to take it. He goes, the other guy won't take it because, oh, I got to move to a different state. Oh, I didn't want to leave. He goes, he never saw that as a disadvantage. He says, I want to do more. And
hey, his mom got on a boat at age 16 to cross the ocean.
Right. So we were living in Minnesota. It was the early 60s, and he got the offer from ITT Supernaut to move to Pennsylvania. And so in 64, somewhere in the early 60s, he managed the office, ITT Supernaut division, where they manufactured high temperature aircraft wire and cable. So it was aerospace and mil-spec material. We were there a number of years when ITT offered him the position of being the regional manager. And the regional manager was either for the Western United States, where we would have moved to the Hollywood area, Eastern United States, which we would have moved to Long Island, or the Central United States, which we would have moved to Dallas-Fort Worth. And he told me that when I was little that we were going to move to Texas because the position that ITT Supernaut has offered me, I have to start my own business. it was a rep. He was, he represented the product. And he said, in Texas, if you fail, they can't take your house away from you. So that was the reason that, that we moved to Texas. That was a fallback plan. Yeah. And I was 8 years old, 9 years old.
I thought you were going to tell me it was because of his entrepreneurial spirit that he got to start his own business.
Well, that is why he accepted that job, was because he got to start his own business. Additionally, the central United States included Wichita, Kansas, which was Beech Aircraft, Cessna, yep, Learjet, Boeing, and right within his wheelhouse of interest of commercial and private aircraft that he supported so well. And I will also say that, in my memory serves me, that's the only time I ever heard him reference failure. And if you fail, they can't take your house away from you. And that's the only time. Well, I'll put it this way. I grew up in a household of ball peen hammers, because there's no carpenter's hammers in our household, because Dad said, well, that just says you're not going to do it right. You got because ball peen hammer, you don't have a choice to fail. Carpenter's hammer says, oh, I think I might not do this.
Yeah, so he probably learned in starting his own business, like most entrepreneurs and most of the people listening, that they burn the bridges. There is no going back. Mm-hmm. Once it's succeed, that's all you can do. Yeah. And you find a way.
So long story short, we moved to Arlington, Texas, lived in the three kids, the dog and mom and dad. We lived in a hotel, motel room for a couple weeks, bought a house, found the office space, but worked out. He had to work out of the garage for the first year or so, and my bedroom was next to the garage. So I, by proxy, became his first employee, and my job was to take the old wire spools, clean them up so he could reuse them and spool wire on them. And that was my job, and I could.
So did you get paid for that?
I did. I got a nickel a piece. I could do maybe six an hour, I think. So that was enough for a couple of Cokes, a comic book, and if I saved the rest for a while, a movie. So, I mean, 30 cents an hour was, 9 years old and 66. That was a living wage.
That was not bad. And, yeah, and the fact that you mentioned comic books, Alan's mm-hmm. now a comic book collector and has a phenomenal collection. And so spooling those wires paid off really nicely.
Yes, it did. And it was good, honest work. So
so did you ask to move your bedroom? So, your dad, he worked for a company. He started the business in Arlington. But eventually, he saw a niche, I want to talk about your dad a little bit, because it really ties into your entrepreneurial spirit. But he saw a niche, and it ties into our listeners. And will you tell us a little bit about that niche he saw and what he did with it?
Of course, like I mentioned, the majority, 98% of our business in Apache Company was mil-spec wire and cable for the aerospace industry. And our customers at the time were LTV, Cessna, Beech, Lear, Boeing, et cetera. And the standard rep salesperson's job was to go in to the purchasing department, help figure out what the wire and cable needs were for the next year, 2 years, 5 years, et cetera. And then, do pricing, et cetera. And it was always a 12 to 16 week delivery on any of these quotes, because the manufacturing plants would have to manufacture for each one of these different companies. And the when you go into a customer and you work on all this, and then you say, well, yeah, the delivery's 12 to 16 weeks. It's, I got planes on the floor. I got a DC-10 that needs 10,000 feet of wire, and I'm paying $5,000 a day just in interest charges on that thing. I can't help you. That's the delivery. I get what I try to push it up for you. And then it winds up being 16, 18, 20 weeks. And that thought, well, if I had pre-ordered this and had it on the shelf, I could do a just-in-time delivery type system, which he wound up calling zero base. And I can have it here for you tomorrow. There's definitely a price. There's a charge for that service, and it's well deserved. But so what he started doing was pre-ordering the common and known items that were going to be sold, warehousing them, and then as the rep, he'd go in and say, yeah, well, the delivery can be immediate, or you can order it on a daily basis.
You can pay X for it tomorrow, or you can pay X for it in 18 uh-huh. weeks.
And it's a inventory management system that was really cost saving for these manufacturers.
What a great innovation. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was way ahead of his time. I mean, just in time delivery, you know, he was the Amazon of his days. That didn't start happening until probably the 90s.
Correct. And it was just kind of a godsend to these military manufacturers of planes. And the other thing that it helped our customer base with was they would always have to over order. They would wind up with a huge surplus at the end of a product run, and we'd wind up buying that unused surplus back from them for pennies on the dollar. And we were able to recertify it and resell it, which really worked to our advantage and allowed us to grow exponentially. But it really saved those purchasing agents a lot of inventory space, a lot of money, to have them not have to order in so much in advance on unsure on how much to have.
Wow, that's incredible. And mm-hmm. of course, there was risk associated with that because your company was carrying the inventory, mm-hmm. And the risk was that somebody might not order it. But
correct.
I'm sure it was also a higher margin sale when you made it for next day delivery. So
yes.
Very, very cool. So you worked with your father and your brother-in-law, Glenn Davidson, in the family business before it was sold. And you guys built this business into an incredible company. It was eventually sold for a lot of money. What advice do you have for anyone that's working with other family members in their family-owned business? How were the three of you able to work together so well?
Well, first of all, from the date of 1966, April, August 7th, when Dad incorporated the company until we sold the business in December 28th, 2009, 43 straight profitable years.
Wow.
And much of that was just due to business philosophy but working together as a family, I don't know what made us so different, but there's the idea of just we are all working for each other, and there was a lack of egos. There was and I think it was the recognition of what each other did so well. And for example, my brother-in-law, Glenn, he's a superb businessman and planner and operations person. And he took us from early 2000s, late 1990s, when he became CEO, he took us from the $60 to $70 million a year range up to over $200 million by the time we sold. But I think that it's just the idea that we were all working together. And
yeah, I think you hit on a couple things that I've seen in other businesses where family working together works so well. One is the family members involved all add value. You know, each of you, nobody was there because you were a family member. You were there because you added value. And knowing you and your dad in the business, I saw that. Mm-hmm. And then the lack of egos and respect for what each other brought to the table and the ability to work together really create a great atmosphere. You mentioned the business philosophy that helped contribute to that 43 years of unbroken profitability. Can you just give me a kind of a summary of that business philosophy?
Well, don't lie to yourself, I think was a big part of it. It's and the idea that you are serving your customer and you have to sell the correct item at the correct price and be the best at it. So you have your customer and your business both at an advantage or at a higher level than before. Product knowledge is the most important thing in the aerospace business. And in a way to illustrate that, once in the 1970s, business jet owner called the FAA, and he wanted to put a television in his Learjet. And when he called the FAA, he said, "What kind of wiring cabling do I have to use? Because there's, you know, restrictions, there's no specs." And the FAA told him, "Call up AE Pecci Company, and whatever they tell you to put in there, that's what you should use.
They'll approve it."
Yeah. So
that's a pretty good reputation.
It is. And the product knowledge and making sure that the correct thing is installed and that your customer gets what they need on time is the most important part of the business.
That's great insight. Mm-hmm. I know our listeners are going to appreciate that. And then the other thing you mentioned that I think is valuable is taking care of the company too. You can't make up a lack of profit with volume. And so you clearly were able to do both really, really well. Mm-hmm. And what a great track record. And you sold it for a lot of money, and the company that was merged continues to do well. You played an integral role in that success, obviously. Yet it was apparent to me that you inherited those entrepreneurial skills from your dad, because as soon as the company was sold, you immediately began building your own portfolio of companies. Instead of one company, you've built a portfolio of companies. You know, how were you able to make that transition from helping your father build his company to seamlessly developing your own portfolio of successful companies?
Well, first of all, I'd done something on my own off to the side. So it was just after we sold the company, I had the opportunity to do it on, let's say, a larger scale. But when I was a junior in high school, or the summer after my junior year, I started my own comic book shop and had that going for a year. And out of school, of course, I played in a band and had a small recording studio. And that was, you know, in addition to being a very fun event, it was also business. And then in the early mid 80s, I started a computer company that we did initially IBM clones and business systems. And we worked up to networking. And then we were the second in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, we were the second internet provider. And when I went back to work for AE Pecci Company, I sold that business to my managers, and it's still going. They've moved since to Ohio, but that computer company is still in business.
Wow. So your dad got you off to a good start, pulling you out of your bedroom and having you spool wire and experience what it's like to start your own business on the side. Well, for those of you listening, and your heads are spinning a little bit going, comic books, music studio, music band, computers, everything that Alan just rattled off, it's all true, and he does it really, really well. I want to add to that. Again, you're following in your dad's footsteps in another way, and that's a visionary. And this is something I think you guys did together, is you had a vision, both of you, to redevelop an important commercial areas in the city of Arlington, Texas. Arlington's located in between Dallas and Fort Worth. It's the home of the Sunday home of the Dallas Cowboys football team and the home of the Texas Rangers and also the University of Texas at Arlington Mavericks. And Alan and his dad both invested in important commercial areas in the city to redevelop these areas. And it's a long-term investment to do that. It's become successful. What inspired the two of you to make such a vital, significant long-term investment in the city of Arlington?
Well, when we moved here in 66, like I said, we had moved around a lot. I'd been the new kid at school many times. And when we got to Arlington and started the business, after a while, Dad more or less just told us, unpack your bags. We are now in the best city, in the best state, in the best country in the world. And this is home. One generation removed from being Austria and Hungary, we found out we're always meant to be Texans. And so that was home. That's it's our family. In the city of Arlington, we would purchase property here. We'd make it better. We'd hire people. You improve your hometown, and just the history and the unique city that Arlington is just makes it a pleasure to deal with. And there's some inspiration of 100 years from now, the idea that maybe our name will be listed with the Collins and the Coopers and the other family names that were here. It would be such an honor that we helped improve this town, and not by that being our goal, but just having the opportunity to do it here and wanting to do it.
The Pecci name has been seen together with those names for a long time as far as benefactors and contributors to Arlington, Texas. And what you just shared made every Texan proud. It made everybody from Arlington really proud. And those people that don't live here in Texas are wondering, what is it about Texas that does this to people? So I'm going to change gears a little bit on a different note. Excuse the pun. I know that you don't like me referring to you as a gifted musician. You might explain that to our listeners.
Oh, it's funny you bring that up. Gifted musician. Not even gifted, you don't even need to say. Back my band, the Penguins, I played lead guitar for the Penguins for a number of years, bands were active from mid-70s to 1993, and I'd been out of the band for quite a while in 1993, but we had when the band finally was playing their last job, we had a big event. We called it the Last Waddle. And there's a band called The Band, and they had a last concert called The Last Waltz. And since we were having our last concert, we were filming it. We called it The Last Waddle. And my now CFO, Victor Irwin, filmed the whole thing. And he's been a friend of the band. And that's how we met, was through music. But he was interviewing someone, and he said, "Oh, well, here is my friend Alan Pecci. He's also a musician." I said, "Vic," I go, "just a second. I'm not a musician. I'm a rock guitarist. There's a big, big difference. So I then that became kind of my tagline is I'm not a musician, I'm a rock guitarist. And so that's where that comes from.
Well, I'm sure your grandmother who toted her violin across the ocean would have been very, very proud of what you've done with music. And it is a big part of your life. You've got three studios, is that right? One which is one of the finest studios in the country that you built right here in Arlington County, finest recording studios in the country. And then two others, is that correct?
Yes. The studio you're talking about is a good friend of mine, Kirk Franklin. We built his studio started in 2013, and he is that out of that studio, there's been Grammy award winning music already recorded, and it's a marvelous place. And somebody at the professional level of Kirk, when he looks and says, this studio we built is the best I've ever recorded in. Wow, it that says something. And speaking of his Grammys, when we built the studio, we had the shelf for his 11 or 12 Grammys, whatever they were. But before we finished the building, he said, I need some more shelf space for those Grammys. He won that many more. So
love it.
Yeah. And you mentioned my grandmother. Okay. when she used to talk to me about music, I in college, I'd go to her house every Wednesday for lunch and to see her. And she cooked me that chicken paprikash. I'm like, gosh, it was so good. And she once told me, she sat me down and told me, I don't know if I should tell this story or not. We can edit it out.
Absolutely. No, you got to tell it now.
She said, now, Alan, she goes, I need to tell you some things. Now, because I was in college, she wanted to let me know that there were girls out there who will try and make you get them pregnant and try to get them to get you to get them to marry you. There's alcohol and there's drugs. She goes, now, and I was playing in the rock band at the time, she goes, luckily for you, you have your orchestra that will protect you from those kind of people, from those alcohol and those drugs.
I love your grandmother. I never met her. That is classic.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, grandma, really the reason I'm doing this.
That's tremendous. So those of you listening, yeah, Alan's been involved in a lot of different things, still is. But what's I've come to know and what's clear to me is the things he is involved in are things he's passionate about. They're things he cares about that mean something to him. They're things that are about purpose and give him purpose. Every one of his businesses, it's not about the money. It's about the purpose it fulfills. And music is a passion. It's more than a hobby. And he hasn't pushed any of those aside to go pursue something else to make more money. He's found a way to pursue his passions, contribute and give back, and also build a beautiful business with and employ a lot of people and do a lot of good things in the community. So my hat's off to you, Alan. You're a great example. And as a result, and part of that is, and I think a big part of it is that Alan and Bonnie both are not takers. They're not trying to accumulate and hold. They're givers. And they've been blessed and done well with that. But they've given a lot. And you guys both give back to the community so much. Why is that so important to you?
Well, it's I think it's the duty of every person on Earth, especially I just take it back, especially every Texan, or there's so much reward out of doing things with other and for other people, that not only reward for yourself, but reward for that person. And that's where happiness comes from, is that reward from interacting and doing things with and for and having things done for you by other people, we always, my father always said, these aren't employees. This is family. And now he's also protective. If a competitor came in, he says, he pulled off his eye and goes, they're in here. Nobody messes with our family. Okay. So, it's the what God put us here for. Be nice.
Well, you guys are so good at it, and you're so appreciated and respected for that. You know, another thing I've noticed is how well you run and manage all your ventures. I mean, I've mentioned all the variety of businesses you're involved in, and you make it look so easy. How do you do that?
It comes from, you got to look at it from the other side. You just recognize someone who's good at something, and you work with them to build that business. I'd say I always joined bands that everybody in the band was better than I was. So, you know, and maybe I started the band, or maybe, you know, as the instigator. But you always have, you work with smarter and better. But for some reason, a lot of those times it's, I wish I could. Oh, I wish if I had my own business, I'd really like to be able to do this on my own. But they aren't in a position to financially, or maybe even, you know, just mentally be able to take that step, or they just don't know how to do it. And my attitude is, why not? Let's do it. Let's say the cabinet shop, my guy, Greg Hunt, who I met through UTA, he was doing contract work and had his cabinet shop. And when we started acquiring properties, he became my contractor. And I said, well, let's move your cabinet shop down to Arlington from Denton area. He goes, oh, I can't do that. I said, why not? He goes, well, I don't know. I go, all right, well, I'm gonna become the benefactor, or I bought his cabinet shop, moved him down here, and now he can't contract for me anymore because he's you know, the cabinet shop's so productive and successful. I don't have the time, but it's having people you can trust who are you give that free rein to, and you'll be just amazed at once you give somebody some support, they're willing to do the things that to keep a company going, even though, you know, I'm not an expert in cabinet making,
right?
You know, and that stuff of things, but you give the support to the person just out of your back. And, well, that goes back to my father. I all the things you mentioned, I've been able to do some just marvelous, fun, great, adventurous things in my life. But in any sort of business, I always had my father in the background, knowing he's got my back. You know, if I ever needed, you know, if I ever got in a spot where I didn't know what to do, or, you know, some transaction was going to go bad and it's going to be just, you know, potentially devastating to one of the companies, I always in the back of my mind, even though maybe I never used it more than a couple of times, I had that backup always. Mm-hmm. And that's the companies that we have now, the music companies, the property companies, et cetera. That's what I hope I provide without having, you know, to apply, you know, I'm just not smart enough to do all this stuff all these people do.
No, thanks for sharing that. That's so right on from what I've observed. You've launched so many great people and great businesses, and they just, you know, admire you and respect you and appreciate you so much. And they know you're there if they need you. And mm-hmm. I think that probably gives them the freedom and the latitude to go out and be successful when they know you have your back. So that's really great that came from your dad to you, and now you're multiplying that with a lot of other people. That's very, very cool. Do you mind sharing any other keys to your success that you think might be of value to the listeners?
Seems like we've covered quite a bit.
Yeah, I think we have. Maybe we've covered all. Any other advice you might have for any of the listeners?
Advice.
Don't lie to yourself.
Yeah, don't lie to yourself. Yeah, just get down the golden rule. That's what it is. And I know through your book, Bigger Than Business, I'll say that one thing in addition to, let's say, my example of my father having my back, as you go through life, you have to remember that you have God. It's got your back. So that's the ultimate fallback, because everything for me is family, whether it's business or relationships, et cetera. And of course, my core family of us six. And that's when things, you have tragedies and things in your life, you say, well, I can't do that. That's what you fall back on. That's who's got your back. Yeah. So,
and I know he's had your back and my back both a number of times when we've needed them. And I appreciate you sharing that. So probably the most important question, and you've really answered it throughout the interview. I don't know if I need to ask it again, but what's motivated you all these years to achieve such outstanding success? What is bigger than business for Alan Petchy?
Like I just said, it's family. It's having Bonnie and the kids. That's everything. That's everything, and that's just motivates you to provide those opportunities for your family and for others. And but it's the family is just everything to me. I can't imagine, going through life without having that as my main purpose. It's that's everything. It's to me, it's family. That's bigger than business, but business part's fun.
Your entire life and every aspect of it is bigger than business. All the things you do, honestly, the people you launch, the people that have come to love you by how you supported them and helped them grow businesses, the charities that you and Bonnie have supported so well, for Bonnie, the board she served on. It seems like you and Bonnie had both, your entire lives gravitate about bigger than business. It's about your family, about others. And it's good to see. And I hope the listeners have gotten that sense today through this podcast. My good friend, Alan Petchy, appreciate you being here with me today and sharing this insight and your transparency with our listeners.
Well, it's been my pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in to Bigger Than Business. To hear our latest episodes, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or your favorite podcast provider. Do you know a successful business owner who you believe is achieving their purpose in life and want to recommend them for Jeff to interview? Please visit our website at thecapitalchartroom.com and let us know. And remember, in life, always create a vision for your success that is bigger than business.